To WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines as a 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat for 10 hours. Asuncion Valdiva had only been in the United States for 1 month before he sickened while picking grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead, and he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And 1 out of 8 children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The official line of the powers that be is that corporations simply do what their customers want. It's nothing but supply and demand and force to release. We can hear the free market thoughts of one Enron trader talking to another about all the money they stole from those poor grandmothers in California by manipulating the energy market in 2001. Yeah, Grandma Millie, man, but she's the one who couldn't figure out how to blankety-blank vote on the butterfly ballot. Yeah, now she wants her blankety-blank money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her blankety-blank for blankety-blank $250 a megawatt hour. Enron executives use market manipulation techniques that they colorfully dubbed Sidewinder, Russian Roulette, Ping Pong, and Donkey Punch. Charming, huh? Other Enroners brag on the tapes about cheating still more poor grandmothers, about shutting down an Enron-controlled power plant to drive up electricity prices, about how awesome it will be if Enron's honcho, Kenny Boy Lay, is chosen by his pal Bush to be the new energy secretary. Alas for Kenny Boy, Enron was crashing, and he was too politically hot to get the energy job, but George still helped him out. For the first several months of his administration, he deliberately forestalled demands to impose price controls to stop Enron's gouging of West Coast consumers. In that time, the corporation essentially stole billions of dollars from its unsuspecting customers, and Kenny Boy himself was able to bail out with a $100 million golden parachute. This is Jim Hightower saying, corporations today don't operate in a free market. They operate in a greed market, aided and abetted by the political puppets they put in office.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Example is First Colony Preferred Best Colony 10-year term policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America...
Well, he's at it again. He's absolutely at it again. I mean, it wasn't enough for George W. to... complain about, for example, to complain about frivolous lawsuits and then sue somebody, or get into office by lawsuit. But it is absolutely, the flip-flops of George W. Bush are just absolutely overwhelming.
Dizzy.
Enough to make you dizzy. It's another flip-flop alert. The 9/11 Commission says, we need an intelligence czar. We need somebody in charge of the intelligence. They need to have budget power. And they need to be able to hire and fire their own staff. George Bush comes out and says, yes, great, I'm going to embrace the 9/11 Commission's recommendations. And all across America, people are going, oh, yeah, good, well, he's going to do something. And then he says, but we're not going to give budget power to that person. And Arlen Specter, the Republican from Pennsylvania, says, if you don't have the authority to pick the people, isn't a national director just a shell game and a shell operation? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's at the top of the day. Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, streaming all over the planet. We got an email yesterday from a listener in India taking me to task, listening on radiopower.org, saying, he's saying there's 160,000 jobs
Silicon Valley is being eclipsed by bankruptcy. Yes, actually, I got that statistic from an article in the San Francisco Chronicle. No, I did not make it up. To our friend listening in India. Anyhow, here we are, and 9/11 Commission flip-flop number one. Here's what's really going on with this, and this is the thing that is not. This is the point that's not being made in the media, and this is this. And it's so critical. It's like people don't get it. 80% of the intelligence budget of the United States of America right now is already in the control of one person. We already have an intelligence czar. Now, if you ask most people, who is our intelligence czar, they'd say, well, it's that guy who replaced George Tenet, his number two guy. Right. Or it was the director of the CIA or whatever. No. The CIA has a relatively small budget. The NSA's budget is, you know, 10 times the CIA's. But no, the 80% of the total intelligence budget of the United States is in the hands of Donald Rumsfeld. Don Rumsfeld is the intelligence czar. And, you know, speaking of shell games, to use Arlen Specter's word here, Don Rumsfeld handles, as Secretary of Defense, the Department of Defense handles 80% of our total intelligence budget. Rumsfeld has power over that. And yet he still felt the need in 2002 to create his own internal Office of Special Plans, his own internal intelligence agency to sift through and sort out and cherry-pick the information on Iraq and get just exactly what he wanted. So now the 9/11 Commission says, well, you know, you really need to have an intelligence person who controls the whole budget. And Rumsfeld is going, hey, that sounds good to me. I'll take that. And they're saying, but don't make it the Department of Defense. Because you really don't want the people who are supposed to fight the war being the ones who are providing the intelligence that's going to help you decide whether or not to fight the war. Particularly when the guy who's in charge of fighting the war, in this case Rumsfeld, previously made a living as a lobbyist for the defense industry. What's wrong with this picture? I have to assume that all across America there are people who are getting this and scratching their heads going, what is up? Well, what is up is the classic hypocrisy. The classic hypocrisy of Republican administrations. And yes, that sounds incredibly partisan. And the Democrats have certainly no shortage of hypocrisy, but it gets mind-boggling when you look at the history here of this thing. And you go back into it. Just taking Democrats and Republicans for a moment. We're going to talk about the Greens, actually, in the next hour. We're going to have on the David Cobb, the candidate for President of the United States from the Green Party. A good man, a good friend, and a guy who's going to be out there. He is out there right now campaigning against George W. Bush and John Kerry, but doing it strategically. Anyhow, we'll get to that. But comparing Democrats to Republicans, because they have both actually run this country. Real growth, now this is looking at the period from 1960 to 2002, right, the last 40 years. Real growth averaged 4.09%, basically 4.1% in Democratic years, 2.75% Republican years. So real growth, about twice as fast under Democrats. Unemployment on average, 6.44%, only 5.33% under Democrats. Well, the cons say, Republicans spend less money from the federal government. No, sorry. Federal government spending under Republicans, 20.87% of GDP versus 19.58% for Democrats. The Democrats actually have smaller government. Smaller government. Isn't that interesting? Inflation, Inflation was lower under the Democratic presidents, 3.81% on average, compared with 4.85%. This is a percentage of gross domestic product under Republicans. Well, what about the deficits? The Republicans, 2.74% versus 1.21% for Democrats. In short, higher growth, lower unemployment, lower government spending, and lower inflation consistently under Democratic administrations. But you can go all the way back to Lincoln. In fact, it's really a fascinating glimpse back to Lincoln. By the way, our number is 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to chime in. Website tomhartman.com. You can click over to our chat room, which is full of folks already. Drop into our message boards. Leave a message. You can sign up for our free newsletter. We don't sell the list or share it with anybody. Your privacy is assured. In fact, let's pick up a couple of calls here before I get into Abraham Lincoln. This is a fascinating story, but 1-866-889-8894. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I watched an amazing thing. I flipped through so many channels. I'm not sure where it was, but it was on one of the cable channels. And they were talking to, I got in the middle of it, but they were basically talking about all the billions sent to Iraq and how many hundreds of millions of dollars have just sort of evaporated into the ether.
Yeah.
And what it would take to figure out and make an accounting of all that money we've sent there because of the potential for war profiteering.
Oh, Bush's cronies are making out like absolute bandits. I mean, yeah, the Halliburton was $169 million that they think that Halliburton skimmed. That number may be wrong. I've actually got the right number around here scheduled for this hour. But anyhow,
they were talking about needing 4-star or higher generals or people to be involved because from the very beginning in the military, they're trained to cover for themselves. So no, they're not gonna investigate themselves very well. It needs to be someone higher up because they know money has disappeared, and there's been war profiteering. But to catch it, they're going to need some high rankings in there, and not just three. They said 3-star generals won't do it. Need 4-stars.
Well, it goes beyond that, Glenn, and it goes beyond the catch-22 stuff. You know, of the classic bureaucracy of the military. You know, hey, let's order some more of this, even though we don't need it, because then you know we won't lose our requisition for it in the next cycle and all that kind of stuff that's relatively endemic in bureaucratic institutions, be they governmental or large corporations. The big problem is that this administration has outsourced so much of the war. You know, you've got 20,000 mercenaries over there that are making $150,000 to $200,000 a year as individuals. We're paying for them. We're paying the corporations more than the cost, obviously, of the individual employees. There's just huge piles of money being made and being spent in this incursion into Iraq, and as we're discovering, the cover story and in these times this week, another item here that I wanted to get to in this hour, George Bush knew before he said aluminum tubes that it was a lie. He knew before he said Africa uranium it was a lie. He knew before he said unmanned aerial vehicles that it was a lie. And we now have the chronology. We can just it can be laid out one after another. This entire thing was built on lies. And you go back to Paul O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary of the United States, saying George Bush came into office 2 days after his inauguration, saying he was going to attack Saddam Hussein one way or another. And here we are, and him and his buddies getting rich in the process. Anyhow, thanks for raising the point, Doug, or Glenn. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Doug in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. This is kind of on topic, but sort of off topic. Yesterday I was listening to one of the right-wing talking heads, and they dropped Dennis Hastert's name as making a statement that Bush was looking into abolishment of the IRS as part
right.
of his platform. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I have. Denny Hastert has been talking about that. Let's go to a value-added tax. And it would be consistent with their worldview, which is that
right.
is that you know people who are spending money, which is mostly the middle class who are spending much of their income, should be supporting people who are investing their income. You know, if you go to a value-added tax, basically it's a sales tax. It's a sales tax that gets added along the way, right? At every stage of manufacture, you say, okay, how much value was added to this steel when it was made into the frame of the car, and then how much, you know, and like that. And they do this in some of the most of the European countries and many South American countries, in Australia.
What is this going to do to the election?
Well, you know, this is the kind of thing that I suspect either they're going to pull out of the box sometime in the next month or two, and this is the ultimate tax cut, right? Abolish the IRS,
and it's a serious wedge issue as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, or they'll do it next year. You know, it'll be the thing that'll be the congressional elections of 2006. But it's to do away with the income tax would just be the greatest thing for anybody in the United States who earns over $2 million a year. And it would mean that the rest of us who don't earn over $1 million a year are absolutely screwed. That's the bottom line.
Exactly.
And welcome to the conservative vision for America. Doug, thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
an ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, a call to take back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Promise, promise, more nice day, wanna make life day.
Somebody say.
And welcome back.
Hello.
Paul Simon is great. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. And it's time for a Hail to the Chief alert here. George Bush has repeatedly criticized what he calls a plague of frivolous lawsuits. In 2001, he said, it's really important that we not have our system laden down by unnecessary lawsuits. More recently, he complained that there's too many lawsuits, a lot of them frivolous and junk lawsuits. Yet, as the historical record shows, it was George W. Bush who in 1998 actually hired a trial lawyer and filed a lawsuit against a rental car company that legal experts called unnecessary. On November 2nd, 2000, the New York Daily News reported that Bush sued Enterprise Rent-A-Car in Austin over a fender bender involving his daughter, even though no one was hurt, and insurance would have covered the collision. Bush, quote, also tried to sue the woman who was driving the rental car, but was unable to serve her with the papers. Lawyers familiar with the Texas insurance law said such a suit would normally not be necessary. One lawyer involved in the case said Bush sued because, quote, he had paid for the repairs out of his own pocket, and that Bush pursued legal action even though the parties exhaustively tried to resolve it short of a lawsuit. Our daily mislead, misleader.org. A few more Bush flip-flops just to toss them in for the day. He's against campaign finance reform. Then he's for it. He's against creating a Department of Homeland Security. Then he's for it. He's against having a 9/11 commission. Then he's for it. He's against having an independent Iraq weapons of mass destruction investigation. Then he's for it. He's against deficits. And then he's for them. He's for free trade. Then he's for tariffs on steel. Then he's against them. He's against the U.S. taking a role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Then he is in favor of the U.S. taking a role in the Palestinian conflict. He's for states deciding whether or not gays can marry. Then he's for changing the Constitution and forbidding states from having that right. First, he says he'll provide money for first responders, police, fire, emergency. Then he says, we can't afford it. He says help is on the way to the military. Then he cuts benefits. At one point, he said the most important thing is for us to find Osama bin Laden. And then, 14 months later, he says, I don't know where he is. I have no idea, and I really don't care. And, well, the list goes on and on. We'll save the rest of it for some other time. The truth about Dick Cheney and Halliburton, speaking of war profiteering, I don't know if you've noticed, probably if you listened to faux news, you hadn't, but the Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation. A criminal investigation into Halliburton's activities when Dick Cheney was CEO. There are a couple of different issues here. The first, this one isn't the subject of the criminal investigation with regard to the Justice Department. This is just the Securities and Exchange Commission looking into it. Starting in 1998, Halliburton began counting as revenue money it had not yet collected. This is called Enron accounting. Who was in charge? Dick Cheney. And the company's current CEO, in a brilliant bit of butt covering, says, Cheney knew about that. Since 1995, American companies have been banned from conducting business with Iran. Now, this is what the Justice Department's looking into. Halliburton opened an office in Tehran while Dick Cheney was CEO, according to the Wall Street Journal, July 20th. The U.S. Justice Department, in that same Wall Street Journal article, noted that the U.S. Justice Department announced a criminal investigation into Halliburton's business dealings in Iran Under Cheney, Halliburton not only did business with Iran, he did business with Libya and with Saddam Hussein's Iraq. As the New Yorker reported, the United States had concluded that Iraq, Libya, and Iran supported terrorism and had imposed strict sanctions on them. This was under the Clinton administration, but Cheney figured out a way to get around it, reincorporate a subsidiary in the Cayman Islands, and just say, hey, it's not an American company. We don't have to follow American laws. Yeah. And on, no bid contracts, millions of dollars, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel, cultural and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines as a 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat bed in the United States for 1 month before he grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead, and he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And 1 out of 8 children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Boy, it's, you know, the weather does seem to be changing. Here in Vermont, it's been nothing but rain all summer. Other parts of the country, nothing but drought. Is it global warming? Or is it just, you know, weirdness, just general weirdness. Probably just general weirdness, and maybe a little bit of global warming. Anyhow, the war in Iraq, some interesting information.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that.
Oh, yeah.
I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq.
Oh, me too.
I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it had something to do with Congress deciding that. But in any case, it's... lest we forget.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations.
You lose. Sorry, not true. By the way, here now, 37,000 Iraqi civilians dead so far. This, according to an Iraqi group that has been putting these statistics together ever since the invasion in March of last year. It's called the People's Kifa. And they told Al Jazeera that they are, quote, 100% sure of the estimate. The U.S. military puts the estimate around 15,000, which is still... 15,000, is that what? 3,000, 3, 6, 9, 12, 13, 14, 15. It's about five times the number of people who died in the World Trade Center, which was the pseudo-rationale that George Bush used. Civilians, innocent civilians, dead in Iraq now. Wouldn't it be just an incredible tragedy if we reach the point? You know, I don't even want to go there. You know, guessing. I'm not even going to go there. This remarkable piece by Robert Fisk that was in The Independent. The Arab News picked it up. It's getting around. In fact, this morning, we were doing show prep, you know, going through the news and whatnot. I was listening to BBC on Sirius Radio, and Robert Fisk comes on. He's being interviewed. He's in Baghdad, and he references this piece that he wrote, which basically said the same thing that he said. And what he said was, "We're losing Iraq. We are losing Iraq." In Fallujah, you can't get a haircut. The women are covered. Anybody who sells alcohol gets dragged through the streets and whipped. They're back to Sharia law in Fallujah. The Americans can't go in there. Now, we all know about that. Although, frankly, I'd say probably 70% of Americans don't even know about that. They're certainly not talking about it on faux news. You know, here's an AP story, for example. With U.S. Marines gone and central government authority virtually non-existent, Fallujah resembles an Islamic mini-state. Anyone caught selling alcohol is flogged and paraded in the city. Men are encouraged to grow beards, and barbers are warned against giving Western haircuts. The cleric Abdul Qatar al-Asali says, "After all the blood that was shed and the lives that were lost... we shall only accept God's law in Fallujah." This is the Iraqi view of God's law, not George Bush's view of God's law. We have dueling God's laws here. Although I suppose they probably both agree about gay marriage. Anyhow, he says, "We must capitalize on our victory over the Americans and implement Islamic Sharia laws." Sunday, for example... they say, you know, steps taken by the Mujahideen over the past month have gone beyond simply encouraging piety. Sunday, for example, scores of masked Mujahideen shouting, "Allah Akbar! God is great," paraded four men stripped to their underpants atop the back of a pickup truck that drove through the city of Fallujah, their backs bleeding from 80 lashes they received as punishment for selling alcohol. Well, Robert Fisk, who is there... says, "It's not just Fallujah. We've lost Hilla. We've lost Mahmoudia. We've lost Kut. We've lost Samarra. We've lost Bakaba, or Bakaba. We've lost large sections of Baghdad. He writes in the Independent, he says, doesn't Blair realize, he's British, of course, he's talking to Blair, he says, you know, watching any Western television station in Baghdad these days is like tuning into planet Mars. Doesn't Blair realize that Iraq is about to implode? Doesn't Bush realize this? The American-appointed government, in quotes, controls only parts of Baghdad. And even there, its ministers and civil servants are car-bombed and assassinated. Baqaba, Samarra, Kut, Mamoudia, Hilah, Fallujah, Ramadi, all are outside government authority. Ayad Alawi, the prime minister, is little more than mayor of Baghdad. Tony Blair says, some journalists almost want there to be a disaster in Iraq. Robert Fisk says, he doesn't get it. The disaster exists right now. Last month, the month of July, the death toll for Iraqis in Baghdad, just in the city of Baghdad, the number of Iraqis who died in the city of Baghdad last month was over 700. The largest number of deaths in the city of Baghdad since the end of the invasion in March of 2003. But, as Robert Fisk points out, you won't find that on American or British news. He says, in Baghdad, I turn on my television and watch Bush telling his Republican supporters that Iraq is improving, that Iraqis support the coalition, that they support their new U.S.-manufactured government, that the war on terror is being won, that Americans are safer. Then, he says, I go to an internet site and watch two hooded men hacking off the head of an American in Riyadh, tearing at the vertebrae of an American in Iraq with a knife. Each day, the papers here list another construction company pulling out of the country. Then he adds, and I go down to visit the friendly, tragically sad staff at the Baghdad mortuary, and there every day are dozens of those Iraqis we supposedly came to liberate, screaming and weeping and cursing as they carried their loved ones on their shoulders in cheap coffins. He wraps up his column, as foreign workers pour out of Iraq for fear of their lives, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell tells a press conference that hostage-taking is having an effect on Reconstruction. Effect, he writes. Oil pipeline explosions are now as regular as power cuts. In parts of Baghdad now, they have only 4 hours of electricity a day. The streets swarm with foreign mercenaries, guns poking from windows, shouting abusively at Iraqis who don't clear the way for them. This is the safer Iraq, which Blair was boasting of the other day. Which world does the British government exist in? Very, very, very difficult times. We have kicked over, and this is what everybody was trying to tell Joy. I mean, we have kicked over a hornet's nest, and we wonder why there's hornets all over. And all the largest demonstrations in the history of the world, people pouring out into the streets of virtually every country on the earth saying, don't attack Iraq. Countries should not go to war against other countries unless they have been attacked first. And Iraq did not attack the United States and wasn't planning to. And the UN had inspectors in there, and the inspectors were saying, you know, doesn't look to us like there's anything here. Which is why Bush could not get a UN vote to attack Iraq. And he leapfrogged the process. Well, this is having political consequences. Today's Wall Street Journal. I mean, not just Iraq, the economy as well. But David Bonderman, founder and managing partner of the Fort Worth, Texas investment group, Texas Pacific Group, who supported Mr. Bush for president in 2000 and earlier for Texas governor, has a few choice words. This from an article by Jackie Calms in today's Wall Street Journal. The article's titled, Kerry to List Supporters Among Business Leaders. Mr. Bonderman, a major big-time businessman in Texas, says, quote, George is a really good guy personally, but his policies are really terrible. And he had an opportunity to bring the country together, which was his MO in Texas, but for reasons only his psychiatrist would know, he's chosen to do just the opposite as president. He's turning out to be the worst president since Millard Fillmore, and that's probably an insult to Millard Fillmore. Another former Bush backer, Owsley Brown II. Now, it's not a great name. Owsley is the name of the guy who is the chairman of Brown-Forman Corp., which makes Jack Daniels. Little inside joke for some of you there. Anyhow, he says, it's, of course, not something someone does lightly. Speaking of coming out in support of John Kerry as a major, big-time, wealthy businessman, he says, it's, of course, not something someone does lightly, and certainly not for someone like me, a registered Republican all my life. But it seems pretty clear that our choice last time, Mr. Bush, has not been such a good one for the United States. So I am looking for the kind of leadership that Senator Kerry will bring, certainly in fiscal matters. The Wall Street Journal goes on to add, Mr. Brown, who supported Mr. Bush's father as well, says the Iraq War was based on naive assumptions about the world, and only the facts that suited the president and his administration about Saddam Hussein's regime and unfounded weapons of mass destruction. Here's another one. Thomas Johnson, chairman of Greenpoint Financial Corporation. This is one of the biggest banking and mortgage companies in the United States. Has come out in favor of John Kerry. This guy's son, 26-year-old Scott Michael, was killed in the World Trade Center on 9/11. Shortly after, the Wall Street Journal notes, shortly after, Mr. Johnson was part of a group that met with President Bush at a Rose Garden event commemorating the tragedy. Quoting Thomas S. Johnson now, as you can imagine, as a parent of a son who was lost on 9/11, I was particularly trying to be supportive of the president and the war, and I accepted that we were doing the right thing, he said. Now, end of quote. Now we shift to the Wall Street Journal saying, but after the past year's disclosures undercut the administration's case for war and post-war chaos in Iraq called into question its military planning, he no longer does support Bush. The war in Iraq exacerbated his disillusionment with Mr. Bush's fiscal policies and deficits. And then they go on to list a whole bunch of other businessmen who are coming out. So, well, we're businessmen. We're supposed to be Republicans, but no. All the unreported Bush scandals. Have you seen this list? This is it's just the Novak Gate. It has now been 423 days since Bob Novak outed Valerie Plame. She was the head of a program, an international program run by the CIA, where they had set up a phony business with branches all over the world and were offering to sell, apparently, according to pretty reliable reports, and were offering to sell weapons to terrorist groups. So they had agents all over the world. They had to shut the entire thing down. People might have died. We have no way of knowing because the CIA just won't even talk about it, other than to say that it was an international program that she ran and was involved with, that was involved in counterterrorism, and it was brought down by Robert Novak, acting at the behest of somebody in the White House, a senior administration official who committed treason, according to George Bush Sr., as Joe Wilson said.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And maybe Karl Rove, or maybe Scooter Libby. Odds are we won't find out before the election. And Joe Wilson adds,
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Now, you think Karl Rove had decided, see, I frankly don't think it's Karl Rove. I think it's George W. Bush. He's the vindictive one in the White House. He's the one with the history of getting revenge. He's the one who's proud of revenge. He's the one who laughed about the executions that he was signing off on in Texas. With Carla Faye Tucker, who had converted to born-again Christianity, and she begged for her life. And he's being interviewed by Time Magazine, and he rubs his hands together, and he giggles, and he does a Carla Faye Tucker imitation. He says, and she said, "Save me, Governor Bush, save me!" And he starts laughing. I'm guessing he's the one. The senior administration official. Well, of course, this is what he had to say about that.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, so 636 days since the Bush administration said that there were weapons of mass destruction we had to look for. 719 days since the anthrax killer struck and they said, we're going to find out who committed this terrorist act that caused the passage of the Patriot Act. 1,066 days since 9/11 and we're still looking for Osama. And 90 days till regime change. Just hang on three more months, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
A leading environmentalist says a growing gap between haves and have-nots is at the root of international terrorism. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Resentment is on the rise around the world, according to Paul Ehrlich, and it's directed at the world's wealthiest societies. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. It argues that the growing gap between rich and poor countries is driving terrorism.
9/11 should have been more than catastrophic enough to open our eyes to dealing with the roots of terrorism. After all, we live in a world where something like 3 billion people live on $2 a day or less. while the average European cow is subsidized to a tune of $2.50 a day.
Ehrlich says he's not justifying acts of terrorism, but he says we should figure out what drives it. Most of the people drawn to terrorist groups come from desperately poor communities in places like Pakistan.
The basic root of terrorism, of course, is that many, many people are getting educated in poor countries but have no prospects for decent livings, and there are even more people who are not educated who basically just feel desperate and see the vast wealth of the rich countries, and that tends to enrage them.
Ehrlich says it's in our own interest to help fight poverty and disease in developing countries.
The gap between the rich and the poor, which is growing in the United States and between nations in many cases, is something we all should be concerned about, because remember, not only are the poor more susceptible to diseases that can move to us, but of course they also are now armed with nuclear weapons, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, and so they are able to make lots of trouble for us, even if we thought it were ethical for us to continue to live high on the hog while they starve.
That's Paul Ehrlich, author of the new book, One with Nineveh. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call.
And welcome back. The coalition is getting restive. Let's see. The country of Tonga is actually has deployed 27% relative to its population of the same number as America. That's kind of confusing. Here it is. Tonga has put in 45 troops into Iraq. That is the largest number of troops as a percentage of their population of any nation in the coalition except the United States. Yep. Mongolia, 180 troops. It's 0.07% of their population. Latvia, 122 troops. Estonia, 55 troops. Georgia, 159. That's pretty good. Albania has only got 70. Slovakia, 105. New Zealand, 60. Macedonia, 28 people. 28 troops Macedonia has sent to Iraq. Singapore, a major ally of the United States, the Republic of Singapore, 33 soldiers they sent. A number that is probably making Moldova jealous. They have 12 soldiers there. Kazakhstan, 29 soldiers. Well, let's get into some of the higher numbers here. Okay, Lithuania, 105. This is a true coalition. This is really sharing the burden here. The Czech Republic, 110. Azerbaijan, 151. Hey, that's not bad. Hungary sent 300 people. The country of Georgia sent 159. Mongolia sent 180. You know, you add up all those numbers, of all the numbers that I just gave you, and it's fewer people than the number of American soldiers who have died or been seriously wounded in Iraq so far. And isn't it just a hoot? I mean, you watch these cons on the talk shows and, no, we got a real coalition. How dare you say George Bush didn't know how to put together a coalition? How, you know, you can't speak of, speak ill of him. Honduras, zero troops. Nicaragua, member of the coalition, zero troops. The Dominican Republic, another proud member of the coalition, zero troops. The Philippines, zero troops now. Spain, zero. Canada, zero. Well, I guess you've got to give it to South Korea. They sent 600 to make up for the, 30,000 that we've got there? Hey, we really need to fix this problem. And, George, but you can't, as Gandhi said, very often, you cannot solve problems with the same mentality that created them. It's time for a change in the United States. You can help bring it about. Be sure to register and vote.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines. The 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat for 10 hours. Asuncion Valdiva had only been in the United States for 1 month before he sickened while picking grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead, and he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And 1 out of 8 children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Very soon now, you'll be hearing and reading red, white, and blue editorials about your responsibility to go vote this fall. Every vote counts, they'll cry. Unless, of course, it doesn't. Many of our votes this year will be cast and tallied on corporate-controlled electronic voting machines that keep no trackable record of our ballots. These computers can easily malfunction and be manipulated, meaning they can be used to cheat and steal elections. Here's a question. Shouldn't your vote for president or Congress or whatever be at least as secure as a 25-cent bet you might place in a Las Vegas slot machine? Of course. Yet a New York Times investigation finds that gamblers are more protected than voters. For example, the software to all gambling machines is on file with the state, and the machines are constantly spot-checked by public officials. But corporate purveyors of electronic voting machines consider their software a trade secret, off-limits to public inspection. Also, if a company wants to sell a gambling device, it must submit to a criminal background check and register its employees. To sell computerized voting devices, however, a corporation only has to convince a local election official to buy its stuff. No checks required. Then there's the conflict of interest issue. The technical labs that certify gambling devices must be independent of the makers of those machines. For voting machines, however, the certifying labs are chosen and paid for by the manufacturers. And what if you think you've been cheated? With a slot machine, you have a right to an immediate inspection, and investigators are on call at all hours, empowered to open the machines and find the flaw or fraud. But with electronic voting machines, there are no inspectors on call, and any subsequent inspection is not allowed to open the machines. This is Jim Hightower saying, why should gamblers be more protected than voters? To fight this scam, go to www.verifiedvoting.org. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. If you had an opportunity to kind of assemble from parts the ideal presidential candidate, right? A little bit of this, a little bit of... What would he be? Or she, for that matter. I would say that anybody who would give a speech that would say something like this would be right up at the top of my list. Let me just share this brief clip with you.
Corporations have literally hijacked our governing institutions and are defining our culture and our society and our law. It's time for we the people to rise up in a nonviolent social justice revolution where we call for the ability to create the society that we want, to challenge the illegitimacy of corporations claiming constitutional rights, and then being able to overturn democratically enacted laws at the local, state, and federal level. We've got to understand that the corporation as an institution has become the next monarchy.
Now, there's a guy that I would vote for if I lived in a safe state, which I do, the state of Vermont. That's David Cobb, the candidate of the Green Party, and David is with us, I believe. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I am great. How about you?
Man, I'm doing wonderful. It's good to hear your voice, my friend.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you again. David, there's a bunch of points here that I think it's really important for us to cover with our listeners. First of all, there was this struggle within the Green Party some months ago. Really, some would say, kind of for the heart and soul of the Green Party, about whether they were going to, you know, go down the road with Ralph Nader again, like they did 4 years ago, or whether they were going to pursue a more strategic approach to growing the Green Party. And you were part of that second group, and you won out. I mean, you're the guy. You're running for president of the United States, and I salute you on that. You want to tell us just a little bit about the internal politics of that, and how the Green Party is recovering or healing from the debate?
Well, sure, Tom. You know, it's true that there was a struggle for the Green Party presidential nomination. But the Green Party is a Democratic organization, and I sought the Green Party's nomination on a strategy that said that we should focus at the local level, help elect more Greens at the local level, convince more people to join the political process who have given up on it, to convince them to register into the Green Party, to join the Green Party as the electoral arm of the growing movement for peace, racial and social justice, real democracy, and environmental protection. I also wanted to tell the truth about John Kerry as a corporatist and a militarist who doesn't advance a progressive agenda, but also this truth, that as bad as I think John Kerry is, George W. Bush is qualitatively worse.
Yeah.
And that George W. Bush has surrounded himself with a neoconservative cabal that is a threat to the planet, to this democracy and this country. So I'm going to tell the truth as I see it. John Kerry is not going to advance the progressive agenda that I have, that Greens have, and I think that most of your listeners have. Yet and still, George W. Bush is qualitatively worse. So that's the truth. Now, that was the agenda that I ran on. I'm proud that I secured the Green Party's nomination. Ralph Nader was seeking the Green Party's endorsement, along with the endorsement of the Reform Party, and he created another party called the Populist Party. So there was a lot of confusion. And then just a few days before the convention began, Ralph Nader announced that Green leader Peter Camejo was going to be his running mate as a vice president on the independent slash populist party slash progressive party reform party ticket.
What a mess.
There was a lot of confusion,
yeah.
But I'm proud to say that the Green Party came together. I won the nomination, and I think that the healing is already beginning.
Yeah. Now, when I first met you, you were living in Texas, and in fact, you ran for lieutenant governor of Texas, didn't you?
Well, I ran for attorney general.
Attorney general.
As a Green.
That's
on
right.
on the platform that said that the people's lawyer, which is what an attorney general really is, ought to be using the tools of corporate charter revocation, and should be vigorously prosecuting corporate crime, and not only revoking corporate charters, but actually vigorously investigating and ultimately prosecuting environmental law,
yeah.
And
crimes by corporations. Yeah. David, are there any attorneys general in the United States who are doing that?
Well,
who are living up
to
their mandate?
The New York Attorney General has actually done a wonderful job of reining in some of the very worst abuses on Wall Street, and also actually revoked the charters. Began charter revocation actions against the Tobacco Research Institute, which were nonprofits that were really not nonprofits. So
yeah.
There is, in fact, examples of this, but there's not yet the political will and the public awareness that's necessary.
Yeah. Okay. So to get back to the Green and Nader thing, I just feel like, you know, we need to close this out, I think, for a lot of our listeners, and it's my perception, and tell me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, I'm just on the outside looking in. It seems to me that the Green Party was really harmed this year by, in the minds of many people, by that debate, and that it has, you know, at some level, the Green Party has some work to do with regard to saying to people, you know, we're really in favor of American democracy. And it's really a shame, you know, what happened in 2000, even though the Greens, you know, most Greens would say that they're not responsible for it. Still, you know, Nader got 100,000 votes in Florida, blah, blah, blah. And we all know that, you know, it's really, you know, Jeb Bush stole the election and, you know, bumping people off the voter rolls. And we're not going to redebate that, I don't think. But it just seemed that there was some kind of a wounding that happened. And how is the Green Party now reaching out to people who were formerly Nader voters? And talk a little bit also about the idea of strategic campaign that you're running.
Sure. And I guess I would, since we've only got a limited amount of time to cover a lot of material, I would ask listeners to check us out on the web at www.votecob. That's www.votecob.org to find out about a lot of this information. Now,
that's C-O-B-B.
The reality is that the Green Party is getting larger, stronger, and better organized with every election cycle.
Right.
And that includes, by the way, since 2000. More people are joining the Green Party. More people are running for office as Greens. And, Tom, more people are getting elected as Greens.
That's wonderful.
So I do acknowledge that I'm trying to run a campaign that is open and inviting to progressives to join the Green Party. While I continue to talk about how dangerous George W. Bush is,
mm-hmm.
And let folks know that if we're really going to have the country that we want, we really have to get involved in the growing movement for peace, justice, democracy, and environmental protection. And we can't just go and vote. You know, that's not enough. The corporate elite have hijacked this country. They've hijacked our government. They've hijacked our institutions. And if we're going to actually do the work of taking our country back, voting alone will not suffice. And I think that that's the biggest message that the Green Party is bringing. And it's a way that we are gently encouraging other people to turn off the corporate television, put down the corporate media, and go out, talk to your neighbors about what's going on. Get involved. You know, write letters to the editor. Help to create an awareness that we, the people, have much more power than we are currently exercising.
Now, David, I have supported and voted for Green Party candidates. And, of course, here in Vermont, the Progressive Party is actually the big one
and
you know, took like a third of the vote for governor and lieutenant governor last election cycle. But Ralph Nader was on the ballot, and I voted for Nader, actually, in 2000 as a Green and supported that campaign. I also have voted for and support Democratic candidates from the Democratic Party. And have volunteered to both, to the Progressive Party here and to the Democratic Party here, that, you know, I'll show up for things. Is there anything wrong with that in your point of view?
No, of course not. Listen,
this is what people should be doing.
If we're going to take it seriously, Tom, people have to have the freedom and be encouraged to do what their conscience tells them to do. One thing that you and I and many other progressives agree upon is the need to change our voting system. Because right now, voters feel they have to often must vote against what they hate rather than for what they really like.
Right.
The solution is not to try to squelch alternative voices or restrict voter choices. The solution is to change our voting system to instant runoff voting so that voters are empowered to actually rank order their preferences amongst the candidates. It's a very simple solution. It's used all over the world. And you know, Tom, the Utah Republican Party has decided to use instant runoff voting to nominate its candidates for office.
That's great.
Showing that instant runoff voting is not a left-wing idea. It's just a good government idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in Australia. It's done nationwide. It has been for 15 years or a variation.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It's in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, London. I mean, it really is used all across the world in elections. It's been used in preferential voting. It's been used in Massachusetts for years. There was a time when it was used all across the country during the heyday of the progressive era,
mm-hmm.
which basically shows, Tom, that when there is a broad and deep social movement in this country, we can advance a progressive agenda. And that's what you and I and other progressives, whether you consider yourself a Green, a Democrat, an Independent, what we can agree on is we have to articulate a shared vision of the world and roll up our sleeves and do the work. That's why I'm encouraging listeners, go to our website at www.votecob.org, get involved, donate money, get involved, and help. And you know what? If my campaign is not one that you can get involved in, then find a progressive campaign you can get involved with. It's the only way we're going to be able to advance our shared agenda.
Oh, man, we're talking to David Cobb, who is the Green Party candidate for President of the United States in the 2004 election. David, what about the swing states? What do you say to somebody in Michigan who's listening to the program right now? Should they vote for you or should they vote for John Kerry?
Well, listen, I would ask them to vote for me, Tom, because I believe that in order to advance this agenda, we really have to articulate our and have people actually vote for them. But I understand that many voters are so terrorized by the prospect of four more years of George Bush that in the swing states they're not going to vote for me. They're going to vote against Bush and hold their nose for Kerry. And to such a person, I say, I understand. So if you feel like you have to do that, then do what you need to do at the presidential level.
Yeah, no,
register into the Green Party.
Okay, that's a great strategy. But I thought that a key component of your campaign was going to be, if you live in a swing state, you know, participate with us, join us, you know, share a philosophy with us. But when you walk into the voting booth, vote for the Democrat.
Well, that's not my strategy. Many people who support me are articulating that strategy. I know that you articulate that strategy, and I totally respect you and others for articulating that. It's not my strategy, but you know what, Tom? At the end of the day, I don't control the voter. You don't control the voter. John Kerry doesn't control the voter, nor does anybody own votes. The voter has their own vote. They'll decide how to cast it based on whether or not a candidate has earned their support.
Well
so
said, David.
I respect your strategy, but I have a different one.
Yeah, well, that's fine. David, stick around here. I've got a couple more questions for you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with David Cobb, candidate from the Green Party for President of the United States. VoteCobb.org is website. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges.
To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Well, 24 and a half, let's say. And we're talking with David Cobb, Green Party candidate for President of the United States. David, what are the commonalities that you have, or the Greens have, with the Democratic Party?
Well, you know, Tom, it's a good question, but I think that in order to really address it, we really have to separate the Democratic Party and talk about which Democratic Party we're talking about. Because The reality is that the overwhelming majority of rank and file members of the Democratic Party are quite progressive people who want universal health care, they want to end the war in Iraq, they want to move towards sustainable energy sources. They want to move towards genuine racial justice. They'd like to see schools instead of prisons.
And they want the right to unionize.
They want to repeal Taft-Hartley,
although they don't realize it.
Those are all values that the Green Party shares.
Right.
But the reality is that there's another Democratic Party called the Democratic Leadership Council.
Well,
National Committee.
Yeah.
Hang on just a second here, David.
The Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Leadership Council are two separate things. And that the Democratic Leadership Council is this thing that Bill Clinton came up with to turn the Democratic Party into Republican light. And I see this war going on inside the Democratic Party between the Democratic Leadership Council that wants to turn it into a corporatist party and the old line Democrats who would like to say, you know, we're the party of the people, you know, to the extent that they had historically, you know, in the Franklin Roosevelt sense. And how that's going to shake out is something that really concerns me, frankly.
Well, I totally understand. I can just tell you that I've labored in that field, Tom, and worked very hard in 84, 88, and 92. And I became convinced that the corporatist had hijacked the system and corporate money had so
massified
like a cancer that there was nothing to do.
Yeah, they certainly did in 92. I mean, that's what brought Bill Clinton to power.
So, you know, the reality is that Bill Clinton and that administration really created the circumstances for the growth of the Green Party. But, you know, it's also important to look at American history because Franklin Delano Roosevelt is credited rightly with enacting great legislation for a social agenda. But the reality is it required a third party and alternative parties to really push it and force the Democratic administration of Franklin Roosevelt to adopt those policies. It's very important to acknowledge that third parties have played a critical role in American history.
Well,
abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, creating the Social Security Administration, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation laws, pure food and drug laws, electing U.S. senators. The reality is that third parties advocated for all of those issues at a time when the establishment parties fought against them.
It's keeping their feet to the fire. And you know, Woodrow Wilson wouldn't have become president if it wasn't for, you know, Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, go back to...
Yep, you know, there you go. I mean, another third-party effort. So, again, if we actually were able to change our voting system so that we would encourage voters to actually feel empowered to vote for what they really want and know that their votes were going to be counted, we would see voting participation go up. We'd see progressives get elected with much more frequency. We'd really be able to change this country. I have absolute faith and confidence that the American people are much more compassionate, loving, gentle people than the elected officials who are in Washington D.C. right now.
So how do we? What are the steps? We got it. We have about a minute left. David, can you stick around for another 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, I can do 10 more minutes.
Okay, great. And if anybody would like to call in and talk to David or has any questions for David Cobb, a Green Party candidate for President of the United States, the number is 1-866-889-8894. How do we go about doing that? We've got only about 30 seconds here before we got to take a break. But just do you have a quick thing on how IRB can help?
We need an inside-outside strategy. Good progressives like you stay in the Democratic Party if that's where you want to be. But those people who want to work within the Green Party, call us at votecobb.org. And get involved,
yeah.
And then we'll talk about it after the break.
Yeah, and I'm telling people to do both, frankly, which is what I've been doing. I think that those of us who identify ourselves as Greens or Progressives or whatever it's been historically, I mean, there've been different names over time, need to be infiltrating the Democratic Party and take it back from the DLC. And, you know, because the power of a major political party like the Democrats and the Republicans has the ability to bring about instant runoff voting and things like that. You know, it's like you said, Roosevelt made those changes. Anyhow, we'll continue this conversation right after the break. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines as a 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat for 10 hours. Asuncion Valdiva had only been in the United States for 1 month before he sickened while picking grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead, and he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And 1 out of 8 children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It feels like 1984, doesn't it, David?
Oh, man.
Like the novel, not the year. Yeah, 84 was actually a pretty decent year. I remember when 1984, the year, happened, thinking, well, George Orwell was wrong. And I'm looking back now and going, he was so right. You know, the perpetual war.
Well, you know,
war.
Tom, what's interesting is George Orwell was right and wrong. He was right about the level to which the wealthy elite would stoop. What he was wrong about was how sophisticated and subtle the control would be.
Yes. Yeah. In the book 1984, which the last time I read it, I was in Australia. It was a couple of years ago, and it was giving me nightmares. I had to stop reading the book. You know, between that and the time zone changes and everything, it was just so blunt what the government was doing, what Big Brother was up to. But debates. Are you going to be in any of the?
I'm definitely going to be in some alternative debates with other alternative parties. We are working very hard to try to get into the corporatized debates as well as the Citizens Debate Commission, which has been formed. And we're going out into the debates in the courts of public opinion, advancing our message of peace, justice, democracy, and ecology.
Okay, and I assume that you're fighting to get into the debates that will involve Kerry and Bush.
That's correct.
Are you also fighting for the right of, for example, the Libertarian Party or any other more conservative parties to also participate in those debates, so that there's somebody who's going to cut into Bush's vote as opposed to you cutting into Kerry's vote?
Absolutely, Tom, and it's not just because the Libertarian will cut into Bush's vote, which is a happy result as well. But I'm fighting for the voters to be allowed to hear alternative voices so that the voter can actually have the choice to decide how to cast their ballot. You know, if we're going to take democracy seriously, it means the people rule. And in order for the people to rule, we're going to have to take our country back. And I believe the Green Party is a political party that's advocating those principles. And I'm encouraging your listeners to go to our website at www.votecobb.org and get involved with us.
Yeah, it's a great website, by the way. Nice pictures there on the front page.
Thank you so much.
I was just checking it out during the break.
And, you know, Tom, even deeper, I really allow me the opportunity to plug the last hours of Ancient Sunlight, which is really a profound piece of work. We've got to really understand that the current economic, political, and social system, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, is really the wrong direction. We've got to move towards genuine, sustainable economics in this country. We need to move towards genuine, peaceful relations with our neighbors and with each other. We've got to change the way we're living on this planet if there's going to be a future.
Well, I've got
and
to
I
tell
believe
you,
the Green Party is articulating that message.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the problem that I have. Ralph Nader went to my son's college a few months ago and gave this speech, and in which he presented a position that I think that the Green Party to some extent has been sharing, let's say. And basically what he said was, and I'm just wildly paraphrasing, this is, you know, third-hand word of mouth, okay, but I've heard Ralph say this on TV, you know, when he's being interviewed by people. I heard him on Crossfire going to one of these rants. He's saying, you know, in Germany you can have third-party candidates. In France they got third-party candidates. In Israel they got third-party candidates. How come these people don't want there to be a third-party candidate in America? And he doesn't bother, and he didn't bother to inform his college audience in the hour that he had to tell them, that in Germany and France and Israel, they have proportional representation.
Right.
And so all these kids who have never taken any civics classes, because we don't teach that in high school anymore, and we don't require it in college, are sitting there going, yeah, this makes sense. This must be a really corrupt country. Our government must be really, these parties must be just terrible. And they don't get it. that when the founders put together our Constitution in 1787, it had never been tried before. And they were trying to synthesize something, and proportional representation wasn't invented until 1861. And
you know, Tom, that's a very good point, because the reality is that 225 years ago, the kind of voting system that we use now actually was the most developed sense of electoral democracy that there were, putting aside the fact that only rich white men were allowed to vote.
Not true, David.
The system itself.
Hey, David, hang on just a second. David, I got to stop you. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say only rich white men can vote. And in fact, blacks were voting in the 1790s, and women were voting in the 1790s. It was the individual states that progressively over time started banning
it. It was a gloss, and kudos to you for being more specific. The reality is, though, the voting system is not enshrined in the Constitution. And the voting system, known as single-member district or first-past-the-post, was the best-designed voting system that had come up with. Today, the rest of the world is using more cutting-edge voting systems, like proportional representation, preferential voting, instant runoff voting, while we're still laboring under a very antiquated voting system.
Right.
We, the people of the United States, deserve to use better voting systems like instant runoff voting and proportional representation. And I believe the only way we're going to get it is if third-party candidates run and articulate the need to change the voting system. The reality is this, Tom, the Green Party is not going away.
No,
the Democratic Party will address us and the issues as well as the voting system, we'll be able to work together.
Yeah, I understand and I agree with you, David. And I got to say, When I hear Ralph or other Greens, for that matter, and or here in Vermont, people in the Progressive Party, you know, they very often make the same argument. Hey, you know, we have a Republican governor and a Republican lieutenant governor right now here in Vermont. Neither one of them got more than 43% of the vote. I mean, it is anti-democratic. And this is, you know, in Federalist Number 10, James Madison was just agonizing over this, begging people not to form political parties, because if you form political parties and there are more than two of them, you have a probability, if there's more than two political parties, that is, elected officials will represent fewer than 50% of the people, which is what we have, of course, you know, all over the place.
Of course, if you have the instant runoff voting system that you and I articulate, that's not going to be.
That's right. But why?
That won't be.
I absolutely agree. But why don't the Greens, and why isn't Ralph Nader putting that front and center? Because ultimately, about democracy rather than kind of ego tripping the thing and just trying to blame it all on Democrats and Republicans. It's got nothing to do with them. It's a structural problem.
Well, you know, I'm the Green Party's presidential candidate, and I'm putting it front and center, and you and I have talked about it quite a bit, and I do everywhere I go, lecturing and speaking to the media.
Great.
So the reality is that the Greens are putting that front and center. I can't speak for what Ralph Nader is doing. I don't really understand what the goal of his campaign is at this point or what he's doing, so I can't really speak to that.
Yeah.
But I can speak to the Green Party's commitment to proportional representation and instant runoff voting.
Are you going to be doing any television advertising, promotion? I mean, do you have a campaign strategy? Are there particular states you're going to be focusing on? What are your goals for this election?
Yeah, the focus for this campaign is really going to be about encouraging people to get involved in the electoral process, encouraging them to register into the Green Party, to vote for Green Party candidates, and to join the movement for peace, justice, democracy, and ecology. You know, and I doubt that we'll be having any of the corporatized television ads that you'll see the Democrats and Republicans using.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to talk with David Cobb, candidate for president of the United States on the Green Party platform. Ken in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Well, I've been listening, and great to hear both of you, and we're looking forward to seeing you here in Santa Fe, Tom.
Thank you.
But I'll have to admit, I am mystified why the Democrats haven't been more responsive to the notion of instant runoff voting. Seems to me this would be a surefire way of getting back control of the Congress, and they just don't seem to recognize their own interests in doing it.
Well, I think they're concerned that it's going to take away some of their power. I mean, if you've got basically a two-party system where you've got two very powerful parties, and somebody like David comes along and says, hey, let's make it a 3-4-5-party system, we know how to do that, they're gonna resist. David, do you disagree?
No, I think that's right, but it's a short-sighted way to look at it, Tom. The reality is that Ken is correct, that What'll happen is that the majority will rule and that more people will participate. I believe that progressives make up a much larger percentage of the country than are currently reflected in elections, though. And if I'm right, it would mean that more progressives would actually get elected. And I, frankly, whether they're called Democrats or Greens or New Party people or Labor Party people is less important to me than addressing the fundamental issues.
Yeah, okay. Does that answer? Ken?
Yeah, and I think that the Democrats, I mean, it's true that over a long period of time, it might actually become a three-way Congress, for example. But for at least a decade or two, it would mean more Democrats in Congress, majority Democrats, because it's going to take time for those the Greens to become that much of a voting factor. In the meantime, all those second-choice votes would be going to the Democrats, and the Democrats would be more powerful than they've been in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it could well be. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. David, just real quickly, and then I'll let you go. We have had times in the United States when there were overlaps. You know, when the Whigs were collapsing, for example, in the 1840s, and the Republicans in the 1850s were coming up. And in fact, who was the president before Lincoln? He was kind of a leftover Whig.
Right.
I'm drawing a blank on his name. I want to say Millard Fillmore, but it wasn't. In any case. Do you see that kind of thing happening? Do you see the Green Party becoming essentially a kingmaker or a spoiler in a real significant way and thus creating change? Or do you see the Green Party rather becoming very powerful and active at a local level and as a grassroots organization bringing about change that can make the country more democratic and that doesn't put it into direct conflict with the Democratic Party, or as direct
a
conflict?
Tom, it depends. I mean, it's a complex question, but here's the reality. The Green Party is growing. More people are joining the Green Party, more people are voting for the Green Party, and we're electing more people to office. Now, whether or not we're only going to be a place where, at the most modest, we'll be a place where new ideas are incubated and put forward the way that other third parties have been such a place in American history. At our most ambitious, we want to move towards proportional representation and instant runoff voting so that we can have a genuinely pluralistic multi-party system. I think it's important to acknowledge that when the Whigs collapsed and the Republicans came into power, it's because there was a genuine political realignment in this country, and neither the Whigs nor the Republican Democrats were actually speaking to it.
Yeah, well, the new Republican Party was actually a reform party.
Well, absolutely it was. In fact, it was not just abolition, but as you know, Tom, it was also agrarian land reform.
Yeah.
So there was both altruism and enlightened self-interest at the heart of the Republican Party.
Yeah, it wasn't until
initial creation.
It wasn't until 1872 that the progressives split off. At that convention, there was that huge battle and.
Right. Anyway. Now, so here's a question, Tom. Isn't it true that you see the global justice forces, the people who understand that corporate managed trade is degrading our environment and spiraling wages and worker safety and downward? You know, what political party is actually speaking to that constituency?
Well, there are a lot of people inside the Democratic Party who are.
Well, at the leadership level, the Democrats and Republicans are basically in agreement on the World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, NAFTA.
I beg to differ. There are a lot of Democrats who are strongly opposed to those things.
Tom, I said at the leadership level, John Kerry voted for NAFTA. He supports the World Trade Organization.
I am suspecting that he is dancing backwards from that. Do you get a sense of that?
I don't know. I mean, let's see what happens. I watched every hour of the Democratic National Convention, and I didn't see any dancing away from corporate managed trade.
Yeah, I'm thinking more
we'll
of the debates,
see.
You know, in the primaries. I my sense of it was that his being in all of those debates with Dennis Kucinich and Dick Gephardt, who was raising a lot of these issues also, but Kucinich in particular, I have a feeling that he experienced an educational process, and maybe this is wishful thinking, perhaps.
Yeah, it might be, Tom, because let's remember he's been in the United States Senate for a long time, and he had the opportunity to vote against NAFTA, and he's had the opportunity to actually vote against corporate managed trade, and so far he hasn't done it.
But don't you think that what happened was that in the, I mean, this is a brand new experiment, David. I mean, it's only been 25 years, basically, that the United States has been that the world, for that matter, has been trying this idea of let's let the corporations figure it out. The marketplace actually does have self-regulating mechanisms. You know, all these beliefs that come with this the new conservative philosophies, as it were, that really came forward with Reagan becoming president. And the experiment and the peak of that experiment, arguably, was when Bill Clinton worked so aggressively to push through NAFTA and GATT. And it has failed. And it has demonstrably
failed.
Tom,
but
and
here's the thing.
Don't you think it's becoming obvious
out
to these
of the
people?
The last hours of ancient sunlight. We've
oh yeah.
Got
Among
to
other things.
Away from this.
But we're running out of democracy. I mean, I'm frankly more concerned
true.
About that. I mean, this is an anti-democratic
system.
At
the end of the day, Tom, you and I, we know that we share, and other progressives share principles, values, and issues. We do have a difference of tactics. I'm saying that I'm willing to be respectful and celebrate a diversity of tactics. And let's just work together when we can and agree to disagree whenever we must.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the kind of tone that will set the stage for ultimate success for the progressives in this country.
How many communities in the United States has the Green Party established enough of a foothold in that you have elected local or state officials or you've been able to bring about local instant runoff voting, for example, I believe San Francisco?
Well, I'm very happy to tell you that we have elected 207 people to office across this country, and that's 207 places where there is a progressive voice joining often with progressive Democrats, I'll acknowledge. But, you know, the Greens were at the forefront of leading the Anti-Patriot Act resolutions that swept the country.
Right.
And in Arcata, California, the local community there passed the first ever binding ordinance actually nullifying the sneak and peek provisions of the Patriot Act, saying, we don't care what the federal government says. In our community, we're not going to allow our librarian, our police department, or our city clerk to comply with any federal sneak and peek prohibition.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. David, we're up against a break.
Hey,
we're out of time.
It was great to talk to you. www.votecobb.org, and I'd love to talk to you again during the course of the campaign.
There you go. Thank you, David. Good talking with you. David Cobb, Green Party candidate for president, votecobb.org. Check it out. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair.
We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications refused to allow an anti-war group to buy space on a billboard in Times Square during the Republican National Convention through Election Day. But public pressure forced Clear Channel to finally accept an ad showing a giant peace dove and a ticker displaying the cost of the war in Iraq in dollars. The 150-foot-long sign will be displayed at Broadway and 42nd Street, WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications alleging breach of contract. What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replaced the bomb image with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was also rejected. They claim that Clear Channel had suggested that the billboard be an image of a little girl waving a flag. Clear Channel Communications is one of the nation's largest media companies with close ties to national Republicans. I asked Deborah Rappaport, founder of the Project Billboard, whether she thought the debate had begun, as Clear Channel Communications' rejection of the billboard had started a flurry of debate in television and newspaper stories.
This was never our intent to get into any sort of a fight like this. We're not unhappy that our message is getting out, but we would be many, many, many times happier if it were getting out in the mode that we had chosen.
We put a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'll fly away, oh glory. I'll fly away.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Fox News Channel gave 4 minutes to Jimmy Carter's speech. CNN and MSNBC both gave 14 minutes to it. Al Gore's speech, his 13-minute speech, CNN and MSNBC carried all 13 minutes of it. Fox News Channel, 45 seconds for Al Gore before the talking heads start pontificating. Ted Kennedy, CNN and MSNBC carried all 25 minutes of his speech. Fox News Channel, 4 minutes. Then the talking heads go in and start attacking Kennedy. Wesley Clark, MSNBC, carried 11 minutes. CNN carried 2 minutes. Fox, none. And, you know, Al Sharpton, that incredible speech that Al Sharpton gave. CNN and MSNBC carried almost all of it, 20 and 17 minutes respectively. Fox News Channel, 2.5 minutes. Now, in the midst of this, First Lady Laura Bush goes on the faux news channel with Bill O'Reilly. And this is remarkable. She says, she's like confiding in him, right? She says, "I think that a lot of times the media sensationalize or magnify things that really shouldn't be. I do think there's a big move away from actual reporting, trying to report facts. It's in newspapers and everything you read that a lot more is opinion." And she's saying this to Bill O'Reilly. She didn't mention the fact that he's got, as the Center for American Progress notes in their progress report today, one of the longest track records of distorting the facts and inserting opinions into the news that there is in cable TV. For his part, O'Reilly, quote, suggested that journalists were just out of sync with most of the rest of the country. Reverend Jesse Jackson's speech to the Democratic National Convention. CNN and MSNBC carried 10 minutes of it, pretty much most of the speech. Fox News Channel, guess how much? Zero. None. Zip. Nada. Niet. As panelist Cal Thomas, he is such a toxic conservative. You know, his column appears in our local newspaper from time to time. But oddly, he said, and this was remarkable, he said conservatives should scream and yell if Fox News Channel covers the Republican convention in the same manner that it covered the Democratic convention. So, you know, he's starting out saying, okay, you can, you know, cut off the Democrats, but then he says, in order to be fair and balanced, the coverage shouldn't differ. Figure that one out. So we'll see. We'll see. In fact, I may even be there. Who knows? Republican convention coming up in about 3 weeks. Strange times we live in. A time of transition, an extraordinary time, actually. We can change the world, as John Kerry said. We can. You and me and all of us together, we can do it. Get out there and vote.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines. The 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat for 10 hours. Asuncion Valdiva had only been in the United States for 1 month before he sickened while picking grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead, and he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And one out of eight children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The official line of the powers that be is that corporations simply do what their customers want. It's nothing but supply and demand in action, they tell us. The glorious free market in excelsis Deo. Nice theory, but reality is another story. For example, thanks to insider tapes from Enron that George Bush's Justice Department was recently forced to release, we can hear the free market thoughts of one Enron trader talking to another about all the money they stole from those poor grandmothers in California by manipulating the energy market in 2001. Yeah, Grandma Millie, man, but she's the one who couldn't figure out how to blankety-blank vote on the butterfly ballot. Yeah, now she wants her blankety-blank money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her blankety-blank for blankety-blank $250 a megawatt hour. Enron executives use market manipulation techniques that they colorfully dubbed Sidewinder, Russian Roulette, Ping Pong, and Donkey Punch. Charming, huh? Other Enroners brag on the tapes about cheating still more poor grandmothers, about shutting down an Enron-controlled power plant to drive up electricity prices, about how awesome it will be if Enron's honcho, Kenny Boy Lay, is chosen by his pal Bush to be the new energy secretary. Alas for Kenny Boy, Enron was crashing, and he was too politically hot to get the energy job, but George still helped him out. For the first several months of his administration, he deliberately forestalled demands to impose price controls to stop Enron's gouging of West Coast consumers. In that time, the corporation essentially stole billions of dollars from its unsuspecting customers, and Kenny Boy himself was able to bail out with a $100 million golden parachute. This is Jim Hightower saying, corporations today don't operate in a free market. They operate in a greed market, aided and abetted by the political puppets they put in office.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our website, www.tomhartman.com. You can click on the chat room link and drop in there. a whole bunch of folks in there having a fascinating conversation about what happened to Dennis Miller. Did he sell out? Is this the consequence of long-term alcohol abuse? Should he have just said no in the 60s? I mean, one of our members says, next time he gets to New York, he's going to stop at 30 Rockefeller Center and check the NBC's Lost and Found for Dennis Miller's conscience. Anyhow, and if you'd like to call our program, the number is 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to get on our newsletter, you can go to tomhartman.com and sign up for that. And it's time for a Walmart alert. As Walmart Stores, Inc.'s compensation policies, say the Associated Press, cost California taxpayers $86 million annually. Why is California paying $86 million annually, its taxpayers? Well, to provide health care and other public assistance to the retailer's underpaid workers. As a result of this sex discrimination lawsuit, you know, the discovery process, all these statistics came out of how many employees Walmart has and what they're paying them and all this sort of thing. And so the University of California, Berkeley's Institute for Industrial Relations crunched the numbers. Pretty straightforward process. They said Walmart, according to these numbers, which are apparently a year or so old, but, you know, serviceable, employs roughly 44,000 California workers who make an average of $9.70 an hour. That's 31%, roughly a third below the $14.01 an hour average of other large retailers with at least 1,000 employees. And as a result of those low wages, the University of California Berkeley study suggests that Walmart's pay scale, to quote the AP here in the story by Michael Litke, the Walmart's pay scale forces the retailer's workers to supplement their incomes with Medicaid, food stamps, and other taxpayer-backed assistance programs. California taxpayers contribute an average of $1,952 per Walmart worker. Our Walmart alert for the day. Hopefully for the week, actually. Well, I don't know if you saw it in today's Wall Street Journal. Those of you who get it and read it, I have a love-hate relationship with the Wall Street Journal. So often, well, not so often, always, their editorial policy is toxically conservative, believing in the religion of the so-called free market, that the, you know, everything will be fine if you just let the corporations work it out. And, you know, very destructive, an editorial policy that, in my opinion, is destructive to democracy, to the middle class, certainly to labor. I mean, openly hostile to labor. And yet, at the same time, their reporting is very often pretty solid. And so, you know, it's, what can I say? Anyhow, the article in the Wall Street Journal today, the headline, U.S. investors have been buying foreign stocks at a record pace. The real headline should be, here's what wealthy Americans are doing with their tax cut. Now, you know, setting aside the fact that there really was no tax cut because there was no reduction in spending, so basically what we did is we borrowed trillions of dollars from our children and grandchildren, and we gave it to George Bush's wealthiest contributors. And, you know, a little bit trickled on to the rest of us. You know, the average tax cut of the middle class was $100. Dick Cheney got $300,000. George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, nobody knows for sure, but probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a million or more, because, you know, now if you make your income sitting on your butt by the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive in the mail, you only pay 15% income tax, and you don't have to pay payroll taxes. Whereas if you make your income working for a living, then, you know, you have to pay, you got to carry the whole load. So anyhow, not only was there no tax cut, but actually taxes have gone. This is just the same thing that happened with Reagan. You know, Reagan came into office, the U.S. debt, the total debt of the federal government was less than $1 trillion. And when Reagan, and by the time Bush Sr. had left office, 12 years later, 8 years of Reagan, 4 years of Bush Sr., which in my mind, frankly, was 12 years of Bush Sr., because Reagan clearly was losing it by about the third year that he was president, and there are some who suggest he was losing it long before that. But in any case, this 12-year period, at the end of that, we had a $4 trillion debt. I mean, he had quadrupled the debt. Well, who did he borrow that money from? You and me! We are paying it back. $170 billion this year, we are paying in debt service on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed so that he could create good times in the 80s to get himself reelected. And George W. is doing the same thing again. But his rationale, of course, the rationale. With these tax cuts, we're going to create jobs and all kinds of wonderful stuff is going to happen, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Well, turns out that what's happening is exactly what those of us who have any kind of rational grounding in economics and just plain old common sense were suggesting from day one would happen. There's two ways that you can go about this, right? You can do it. I mean, you know, if you want to stimulate the economy, that was the stated purpose, right? I mean, that's here, George telling you.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Yeah, so the theory was we'll give wealthy people $500,000 and they'll create a job. And you've heard me rant about that before. And, you know, most of us were going, well, you know, if you just took that $500,000 instead of giving it to you know, Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or Dick Cheney or, you know, other millionaires, Don Rumsfeld, George Bush Sr., Jeb Bush, any of the Bush brothers, actually. Instead of giving that, you know, $500,000 to them and hoping that they would create a job that maybe will pay $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, why don't you take that $500,000 or $550,000 and hire people with it? It's what Franklin Roosevelt did. He said, "Okay, we're gonna stimulate the economy. How do you stimulate the economy best? You put money in the pockets of people who will spend it." So they created the WPA, Works Progress Administration. Said, "Okay, you know, there's things we need done in this country. We need dams built. We need roads built. We need bridges built. We need forests replanted." And even some I thought it was pretty cool stuff. When we used to live in Michigan, we used to live in Detroit. We used to go down to the Detroit Art Institute every Sunday, Louise and I. And this was, you know, 30 years ago. And there's a whole wing of the Art Institute that was dedicated to art that was done during the WPA. You know, in other words, they said, okay, you know, those people who want to handle a shovel, they can handle a shovel. Those people who are artists, we'll hire them too. We're gonna you know, try and stimulate right across the board the entire spectrum of America. And sure enough, it worked. It worked. By the mid 1940s, we had a middle class, just, you know, really strongly emerging in the United States. Between that, so anyhow. And what we were saying was, and on the other hand, you're going to have, if you give these tax cuts to the most wealthy among us, they're not going to use that money to create jobs. They've already got a job. They're going to use that money to invest. Now, where are they going to invest? Wherever they're going to get the highest rate of return. Well, the United States is in recession. You're not going to get the highest rate of return here. Maybe you invest it overseas. And sure enough, this article by Craig Carman in today's Wall Street Journal, U.S. investors are buying foreign stocks at a record pace, lured by international markets' strong returns in U.S. dollar terms and encouraged by their investment advisors to diversify globally. U.S. net purchases of overseas shares jumped last year to a record $72 billion. Through May, now that's just last year. Look at what's going on this year. Through May, U.S. investors bought $36.7 billion more in non-U.S. stocks than they sold, which puts them on pace to be net buyers of $90 billion for this year, a 25% rise over last year's purchases. And they go on to note, the flow of money into foreign stock mutual funds aimed at individuals is increasing at a faster rate than that of new money going into U.S. stock funds. Robert Adler, the president of AMG, which is AMG Data Services. It's a company that tracks mutual fund cash flows. He says, at this pace, international fund flows could possibly double 1994's record year of $34 billion. Welcome to the wonderful world of Bushonomics. Our phone number, 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, as far as Dennis Miller is concerned, I think it's really simple. I mean, the guy realized that there were no comedic talk show personas that paid homage to the hard right wing. I mean, the closest you could come was Ben Stein, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And he just tried to fit himself into a niche.
Yeah, I saw it as, you know, his career was going into the toilet, and it's like, you know, it was a career move.
Yeah.
And in that context, you say, okay, you know, he's an entertainer, he's making a career move. That there's actually something rational about that, you know.
Well,
you
there
figure
is.
Out where the niche
is. Even if you're going about it from irrational roots. Mike, I had a question. Do you know of a website or information outlet that has detailed exactly how George W. Bush has abrogated or ignored the Constitution or acted unconstitutionally? Is there one out there that you're aware of?
You mean that? Wow.
Details one after another, because there has to be a list by now.
Yeah, if framed in that way, I don't know. I would the two that I would look at first would be the ACLU's website.
Okay.
Although the ACLU is really only, you know, they have a very narrow focus on simply the First Amendment to the Constitution. So
right.
But that may be a starting point. The other would be the Center for American Progress, which is AmericanProgress.org. And they do, excellent special reports. They've got a lot of information on their website. That would be a starting point, I would think.
Okay, bro. Thank you much, man.
Right off the top of my head, I'm sorry, Chris. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. America in the 1920s. People, you know, is history repeating itself here? I think it is. I really do think it is. And most people, you know, in America don't. Obviously don't have any recollection of the 1920s. It was too long ago. There's nobody alive who was, you know, a teenager in the 1920s, or very few people, and the few that there are not, you know, out there teaching us about it. But the story of the 1920s, the so-called Roaring Twenties, the Jazz Age, is one that is not often told. And I just want to share just a couple of really interesting insights into this. And about, you know, what's the difference between a pyramid and a diamond? We'll make sense of that in just a second. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. You're in the real free speech zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com. Progressive.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting conversation in our chat room. One of the folks mentioned Delaware. I pointed out that most of the Fortune 500 companies are incorporated in Delaware. The question was, is that because of tax policy? No, it goes back to the chartermongering era, the late 1880s, 1890s, when conservative economics really was at its zenith, the McKinley administration, the one that Karl Rove has said he wanted to model the Bush administration after. Seriously, you know, oddly enough. And John D. Rockefeller had run afoul in the state of Ohio of the antitrust laws. We had laws in this country that said that if a corporation gets so large that it destroys competition, that it suppresses the ability of small business people to create small businesses that would compete with it, if it becomes anti-competitive, it is a monopoly. And a monopoly is something that will not be allowed to stand. You know, very straightforward. We will not have monopolies in the United States. They're wrong. They're destructive. In fact, here's William Howard Taft, President of the United States, talking about monopoly.
The combination of capital in large plants to manufacture goods with the greatest economy is necessary to material progress. When, however, such combinations are not based on any economic principle, but are made merely for the purpose of controlling the market, to maintain or raise prices, restrict output, and drive out competitors, the public derives no benefit, and we have a monopoly. Many enterprises have been organized on the theory that mere aggregation of all or nearly all existing plants in a line of manufacture without regard to economy of production destroys competition.
Destroys competition. Monopolies destroy. President of the United States, William Howard Taft. And he was right. And he was right. And so what happened, and there was a recording made by Thomas Edison. And he was right. And the point of this little story here, and I want to get back to 1929, because this is all part of the same thread. The state of Ohio said to John D. Rockefeller, you can't do that. He was conspiring with the railroads to refuse to carry fuel, oil from his competitors, small local competitors. He was just ruthless, putting people out of business and buying up his competitors in order to get so much power in the marketplace that essentially nobody could compete. Now, you know, oddly, a lot of people today, they go, what's this guy talking about? Because, you know, you look at the main street of any city in America, and it looks just like the main street of any other city in America. Oh, there's an Arby's, there's a McDonald's, there's a Burger King, there's a Subway. But I remember, hey, the old fart here, I remember when I was a kid growing up in the 1950s and 1960s, that every city in America looked different. In 1960, I think it was 67, it might have been 68, I'd have to go back. And anyway, one of those 2 years, I hitchhiked from Michigan out to California and back. And it was just a wonderful, extraordinary experience, seeing all these little cities and all over the, and everything was different. And it's not different anymore. And so anyhow, John Rockefeller was doing what is happening now. And Ohio said, you can't do that anymore. And so Rockefeller said, well, who will take me then? And the states in the Northeast got into this competition with each other. It was called the charter-mongering era, changing their charter laws, the laws on corporate charters. And Delaware won the competition. They have the least restrictive corporate incorporation laws of any state in the union, which is why most of the Fortune 500 is there. I want to get back to America in the 1920s. The average year to live, that'd be roughly the equivalent of $20,000 in today's dollars. Maybe around $14,000, actually, but $2,000 a year to live. The percentage of American families who earned less than $2,000 a year in the roaring 20s was 60%. 60% of America was living below the poverty line in the 1920s. This is what brought about the changes, the transformations of the 1930s. And we are heading down this same road again. Hopefully, we'll bring about the same changes. We'll get into that in a little more in just a moment. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The CEO of CUNA Mutual has been removed after it was revealed that he attempted to bribe employees in a bid to break a union. The Office and Professional Employees International Union has been involved in a caustic labor dispute with CUNA Mutual, which provides insurance and financial services to credit unions worldwide. Two employees from the company's information technology department, who sought to break away from the local union and create their own bargaining unit, were offered $1,000 from CEO Mike Kitchen to cover their legal expenses. Management offering money to union members is a violation of national labor laws. Both the union and company hope that the removal of Kitchen will loosen the negotiation logjam.
Tragedy this week among the California grapevines as a 53-year-old migrant worker died of heat stroke after working in 100-plus degree heat for 10 hours. Asuncion Valdiva had only been in the United States for 1 month before he sickened while picking grapes next to his 21-year-old son. Arturo Rodriguez is the president of the United Farm Workers Union.
That particular day in Bakersfield area, it was over 100 degrees working out there in the fields, and the workers started that morning at around 6:30. By 4:30 in the afternoon, Asuncion Valdivia began to get dizzy and feel faint, and as a result of that, laid down on the ground, and they brought cold water to him and put some cold towels on his forehead. And he began to feel a little bit better.
The foreman supervising the field initially called for medical help, but then canceled the call when the older worker regained consciousness. However, he died in his son's car on the way to the hospital. The United Farm Workers Union is calling on employers to allow workers extra breaks during hot weather in addition to the 2 10-minute ones mandated by state law.
After decades of fighting organized labor, Walmart may have to deal with its first unionized workforce. The Quebec Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union to begin representing workers at a store in that Canadian province. The massive chain still has the option of challenging the commission's ruling, but if recognized, it will become the first unionized Walmart in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The World Health Organization now ranks the U.S. 37th in overall health system performance. Data from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that almost 30% of Americans between the ages of 19 to 29 lack health insurance. For people who have just left college, that number jumps to 40%. And 1 out of 8 children under the age of 18 lack any health insurance whatsoever.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, you know, these things, the cycles of history are aptly named because they really are the cycles of history. And, you know, you can have rough times, but ultimately things do work out, it seems. And I think they will. I really do. I am an optimist. And the reason I'm an optimist is because so many people that I know are waking up to what's going on. Herbert Hoover was president in the 1920s. He'd had essentially 3 consecutive conservative administrations during the Jazz Age. And the Roaring Twenties came to, a sudden end in October of 1929. Really, it didn't sink in, I think, for most people until 1930. It took a few months. And Hoover's response to this was what he called rugged individualism. That was his phrase, rugged individualism. He said you should help yourself and not expect others to help you. The government had no business helping out unfortunate people. And yes, even during the peak of the Roaring Twenties, when everything was going great, 60% of America was living in poverty. See, this is the trend that began in the 1880s after the Civil War with the rise of the railroads and the collapse of the American small farm, which led to the Grange movement and the progressive and populist movements, which brought about a lot of social change in the 19-teens and the 1920s. Right, and before that, even. But there was still this terrible problem. How do we get a middle class back? The kind of middle class that the founders were so enthusiastic about. Now, Hoover didn't have a clue. He kept saying prosperity is just around the corner. In fact, in 1932, it was his campaign slogan against FDR. They have squalid cardboard campsites created in cities. They call them Hoovervilles. Hoover Stew is the name for the soup that the Salvation Army and other charities were passing out to people. 23,000 people committed suicide in 1 year, 1930, the highest ever, 32, excuse me. One farmer in 20 was evicted, 1,616 banks had gone bankrupt. This was, keep in mind, the country was much smaller numerically, fewer people than there are now. So where are we at today? Let me fill you in on that in just a second. Let's take a call here. If you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. We're also going to get Victoria Jones on the line here in a few minutes and get our Washington report for the day, from our Washington News Bureau. But James in Palm Desert is on the line. Hey, James, what's up?
Hi there. You know, I've been listening to your talk about driving across America when you were young. Well, I drive across America all the time, and there is one little tiny town in California that I think you'd find very homey. It's Borrego Springs, California. For some reason, there is not a single McDonald's. There is not a Wendy's. There ain't anything in town except mom-and-pop stores. There's probably about 8,000-9,000 people there. I do some deliveries there. It's outside of San Diego in the desert, and it is like a time warp.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just... You drive through there, and you feel like it's 40 years ago.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Montpelier, Vermont, which is near where I live, it's the capital of Vermont. It's the only state capital in the United States. 9,000 people is the population. The only state capital in the United States with no McDonald's. And the way that we did it, the city father, I mean, we get sued by McDonald's periodically, and we vote to tax ourselves to fight the lawsuit. But the way that we did it was by zoning. We said that if you want to have a restaurant license, you have to make your bread on the premises and you have to serve people at the table. So there are no fast food restaurants at all except one Subway franchise, which is locally owned, and they will serve you at the table here in Montpelier. So
they don't even have a Subway here, but there are two sandwich shops, and they have been competing fiercely, and they're owned by two families that have lived here for almost 50 years.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a beautiful place, and it's what America was and maybe could be again.
That's great. Thanks for the report, James. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Victoria, what's our update for the day? What's happening there in Washington?
Well, as I'm sure you've been hearing, more street closings and more of a flap about the battening down of the hatches of Washington, D.C. as it becomes Fortress Washington.
Do you think that they're doing this in anticipation of the Republican National Convention getting ready to, like, just crank down the security so hard that there won't be any protests?
I don't think so, because the convention's going to be in New York. The city's actually going to empty out.
Mm-hmm.
This city is going to be as quiet that week as I think it was during the week in Boston. I mean, and it was dead.
Yeah, but I mean, the same thing that's happening in Washington, D.C. is happening in New York City right now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, except they're handling it in a much more sensible way, because I don't know exactly what the rationale is. It's hard for me to say that. But they're not, you know, closing down streets and not informing the commuters about that until a couple of hours before everyone's due to go to work.
Mm.
They don't have a Capitol Police chief who is closing streets, putting barricades up, and not telling the mayor or the chief of police or the local representatives. I mean, that's what's going on in Washington.
Amazing. I interrupted you in mid-story. I'm sorry. You were saying.
I'm just saying it's a mess, and people are pretty ticked off about it. Having said that, people are also very aware that who knows, you know, anything could happen, and we want to be very careful.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a growing consensus among the average person on the street in Washington, D.C. that there's more politics than terrorism in this new terror alert that Tom Ridge announced as a demonstration of George Bush's, the president's, marvelous leadership in the war on terror?
Well, I think there's a bit of confusion. You know, we heard the alert on Sunday, and everybody went, okay, that's pretty serious. We'll be, you know, concerned about that. But then the next thing was, we hear, well, the information's 3 or 4 years old. So then everybody went, oh. And then they say yesterday, well, actually, no, with information as recently as a few weeks ago. So at this point, I think that your Washington government worker, who's, you know, we've already been pretty on alert since September the 11th, we're sort of saying, you know, we don't know what we're being told here. We're just going to get on with things as usual, because, quite frankly, Washington is already so badly prepared, and we have a 4 to 6 hour evacuation out of this small city because it's so disorganized that we might as well just get on with it and hope for the best.
Yeah, yeah. What other
it's
options?
It's a mess.
Yeah, okay. So anything happening politically in Washington today?
Well, there are more hearings going on about 9/11. The hearing today is the House Intelligence Committee. It's interesting, those hearings are normally closed.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it is an open hearing. And it's kind of weird, because we were expecting former head of the CIA, Tenet, and the two chairs of the 9/11 Commission to testify. That's what we were told. And then none of them did testify this morning. There seems to have been a mix-up over what room the whole thing was taking place, and space, and general confusion, so they didn't testify. But people, you know, that they are trying to genuinely get information from experts as to what the best direction is to go in. At least so far, it all seems to be genuine. It's very early August, and we've got many, many more hearings to go yet.
Victoria,
that's really pretty much the main thing that's going on. Of course, everybody is following the campaigning and the dueling campaigns of Bush and Kerry, five minutes down the street from each other.
Yeah, yeah. One quick question. There's all this talk about we should have an intelligence czar, and that person should have control over the intelligence budget. And yet, I have seen in the mainstream media no mention whatsoever of the fact that Don Rumsfeld personally controls 80% of the American intelligence budget right now. That, in essence, we already have an intelligence czar. It's called the Secretary of Defense. And in fact, even controlling 80% of the budget, he saw fit to create his own in-house intelligence, the Office of Special Plans, to hype the stuff about Iraq. And you got George Bush saying, okay, I'm going to do what the 9/11 Commission says, but the 9/11 Commission says, give that budget to an independent person, and Bush says, no, I'm not going to do that. I mean, are these inconsistencies, these flip-flops of George Bush's, and this power hold, I don't want to call it a grab because he's already got the power, by Rumsfeld and the Department of Defense, as obvious and transparent to everybody there as they are to me, or is this?
No, they're not obvious to people. I mean, Rumsfeld's being very quiet about this and just, quietly getting on with whatever it is he does and holding on to his power. We know that the Pentagon controls 80% of that budget. I really know it because the 9/11 Commission told me. They said so when they presented the findings and also during the course of the hearings that came out. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known. The press hasn't reported this. The press irresponsibly said on Monday that the president was embracing the 9/11. Embracing was the word they used, too. The 9/11 Commission's recommendation on a national intelligence director, and yet on every single key point of the director, he is going, as you just said, against what the commission recommends, to such an extent that the two commissioners testifying yesterday, two of them, Republican and Democrat, both said before the House Governmental Reform Committee that if this person does not have power over the budget, and President Bush proposes that he does not, it would be better to do nothing and appoint no one.
Right.
You're not hearing that from the press. You're not hearing how the president does want to appoint someone, but it's a completely different route from the route that's being recommended. The press is really, really doing a weak job. They are just being cheerleaders.
Yeah, just like before the Iraq War. I mean, they're doing it again, Victoria!
I know. I know.
Oh well, we're part of the press, and we're carrying our water here. We're gonna carry our water.
We're doing our best, I think.
There you go, Victoria. Thank you so much for the report. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Okay, keep up the great work. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Do my best. Thanks.
Okay, bye now. 16 minutes before the hour. Okay, back to the economy here. Three new reports out yesterday. Three new reports. The Commerce Department, the Labor Department, and a private. A private firm that everybody in Wall Street pays attention to. These reports came out yesterday. Indicate that we are moving in the direction that you could have predicted that anybody with any common sense was predicting back in 1980. If we do what Ronald Reagan and the conservatives are suggesting economically, and then George Bush Sr., and then Bill Clinton, and then George Bush Jr. here, George W., if we do what these guys say and just let's turn the economy of the United States over to a bunch of multinational corporations, then you're going to have an economy that has a very different shape than the one that we want. See, the traditional shape of economies that are run of, by, and for the wealthiest and the most powerful is the shape of a pyramid. There is a very small number at the very top who are very rich and have a lot of power. And there's a very big number at the bottom who don't have any power, who have very little wealth, and are just working their butts off. And the ideal shape that the founders had in mind when Jefferson wrote about creating what he called the yeomanry and plowmanry, what today we would call the middle class, was instead the shape of a diamond that is resting on its, on a facet, on a point, where, at the top there's a few people who are wealthy, at the bottom there's a few people who are poor, but the majority of the people are in the middle. And that diamond-shaped economy only comes about as the result of government intervention in the economy. I know it's heretical to say it today. It was common sense in the 1930s. Everybody understood this in the 1940s. People still remembered it in the 1950s. And now we have been doing this experiment for 25 years. And you can see the result. The middle class is being wiped out. The middle class that we had in this country in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, where one working person could raise a family, put their kids through school, put their kids through college, pay for all their health care costs, and have a pension to retire on, is going. Here are these three reports. The Commerce Department reported today that in June, wages and the salaries in the private sector dropped by $2.7 billion. Now, why would that be? Well, jobs going to India, to China, to Malaysia, to Vietnam, to Mexico. Corporations not having to comply with, I mean, the Wagner Act of 1935 that gave the right to unionization has been essentially reversed. First in 1947 by the Taft-Hartley Act, which in my opinion should be repealed as the first order of business if I was president, right? Number one, repeal Taft-Hartley. And which allowed individual states to say, we're not going to go along with the provisions of the Wagner Act. This is the right to work state provision. That's Taft-Hartley. That was the beginning. We had the peak of unionization in the United States. 35% of American workers were unionized in 1947 when Taft-Hartley was passed. Which meant 70% of American workers had essentially the benefits and protections of being a union employee. And that slid slowly down to 25% when Ronald Reagan came into office, and now it's at 8%. So, you know, the predictable result. See, it's about power. It's not about money. It's about power. If corporations have the power to organize together, to exert their power, to form trade associations, to form chambers of commerce, to form larger corporations, then employees must have the power to organize together and bargain as peers. And that's, you know, that's what a union provides. So anyhow, the Commerce Department says wages in the private sector dropped $2.7 billion. The service sector dropped $3.2 billion, even more. Disposable income is flat. Disposable income rose 0.2%, but there was 0.2% inflation that month, so disposable income was flat, and personal spending dropped by 0.9% in the month of June. We got a problem in this country. We can solve it politically. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
I'm Sarah Turner of the Workers' Independent News Service bringing you today's feature story. A New York police officer went on trial this week for disobeying orders by refusing to arrest a homeless man who was asleep in a parking garage. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
The police officer, Eduardo De La Cruz, a 10-year New York Police Department veteran with an unblemished record, may lose his job. The departmental trial began Wednesday for an incident that happened 2 years ago. Anthony Miranda, executive chair of the National Latino Officers Association, has been attending the trial.
They never gave Officer De La Cruz a direct order. And the police department's patrol guide is very specific wording when it's courts for disobeying an order where you're instructed as a supervisor to say, "Officer, I am now ordering you to take this arrest." And the sergeant on the stand today admitted he never used those words.
Miranda says that he thinks it's a kangaroo court and thinks De La Cruz is being targeted because he's Latino. What is of note is the trial has been conducted in the same year that the New York Police Department settled a $27 million lawsuit filed by 22 Latino and black officers who argued they were more severely punished in discipline actions than white officers. We contacted the NYPD Deputy Commissioner of Public Information for comment and was told we could quote the following. In a paramilitary organization, refusing to obey a lawful order from a supervisor is a serious offense, and it's treated accordingly. And treated accordingly for De La Cruz could be losing his job, despite no orders being given. The civil rights activist Norman Siegel is De La Cruz's lawyer, and I asked him why he thought De La Cruz was on trial for the same incident.
There really shouldn't be a case. They've already punished him more than adequately.
Officer De La Cruz is expected to take the stand in his defense on Tuesday. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.
Amazing.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Mike in our chat room says, Tom, I just had a thought. You argue that we once tried this deregulation, privatization, trickle-down theory for 25 years and it hasn't worked. I agree, but need some historical perspective. What was tried before we tried this? Why didn't it work? And if government regulation was behind the economic problems of the 70s, how do we avoid them in the future? Well, in the 70s, one wage earner could support a family. Now it takes two. There's been a huge shift in America. People don't notice how big that shift has been because, you know, people are just thinking, well, it's normal that, two people work. It historically has not been, number one. And number two, the last time we really tried this kind of economic policy was in the period from 1880 to 1930, that 50-year period. And hopefully it won't take us 50 years this time to figure out what a disaster it is. 1-866-889-8894, our number, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, I just I was listening to your caller talk about how there are towns that don't have any franchises.
Yeah.
And we still got a couple, but we've managed in the last 3 years to get rid of McDonald's. We've gotten rid of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and we're working on Quiznos, and we're working on a couple of others right now.
How?
And it's real simple. It's not even grassroots. It's just everybody gets together and says, you know, I go to church with so and so. He runs a restaurant. I'm going to go there.
There you go. Yeah.
That's how it's done.
It's the communitarian. See, people are beginning to realize now that if you spend a dollar at one of these fast food joints that is out of town owned, at the end of the day they push a button and that dollar gets vacuum cleanered off to Chicago in the case of McDonald's or you know, Bentonville, Arkansas in the case of Walmart or whatever. And maybe 15 cents of it, maybe 17 cents, 18 cents, maybe even 20 cents in some case will come back to the community in the form of wages and taxes.
You know, and I'll tell you something else. People think you need a Walmart. We have a CB Fox. It's a locally owned department store.
Yep.
We don't have anything that goes back to Bentonville, and everybody gets what they need right here, right now, and the money stays here.
There you go. And a dollar spent at a local business will become $1.17 to $1.70 within 1 year, whereas a dollar spent at an out-of-town business will become 20 cents in the local community. And
yep.
You're spot on, Chuck. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the information. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks to Ira for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors for keeping us on the air. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up and hanging out and making for a great conversation. Thanks to Jay for producing and writing and playing our theme music. And thanks to you, especially, for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. I'll be back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in book.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the time.